You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ and Bucky with you here in the middle of the week. We wanted to give you a little bonus episode here, what we're doing today. And what it is, it's a little best of, and it's focusing on what's going to be coming in the future here in terms of the NFL draft, as well as kind of more college focus. So what we have is we have interviews with two players, two prominent quarterbacks in the country, and Drake May from North Carolina, Michael Penix, who was in the college football playoff from Washington, as well as head coaches, Lincoln Riley from USC, Mike Norvell from Florida State, Eli Drinkwitz with Missouri, and Jed Fish from Arizona. So let's get this thing started here, and let's start off with our first chat here, and that is with North Carolina quarterback Drake May. I'm curious about your leadership style, Drake. You talk about being able to take on a little bit more of that leadership role. Is there an example you can give us of kind of, you know, your style in terms of leading these guys?
Yeah, yes, sir. I think, you know, I'm not one of those guys going, you know, say something, you know, all the time, not here and there. I think, you know, big things about leadership is, you know, when someone, you know, when I want to speak, you know, I want everybody to kind of, you know, say, oh man, Drake's speaking, you know, it's something important. So that's my type of thing. You know, whether it's the little things, you know, I think we have, you know, still have some guys jumping off sides on some snap counts. So little things like that, I'll get on to people, but mainly just try to be positive. And like I said, you know, when someone, you know, when someone's talking, I want to be, you know, all the heads are turning, like, oh man, Drake's talking, you know, he means something important. So that's my type, kind of, that's kind of how I try to take leadership approach.
So Drake, you had an opportunity to watch Sam Howell kind of go through some of the same stuff, lead the team, a lot of attention on him, on the squad. What did you learn from watching him handle a lot of the stuff that you're walking into now?
Yeah, I think it was awesome. It was a blessing having the guy go through kind of the same thing. I was kind of, you know, kind of his right-hand man. I was kind of just following wherever he went, just trying to be in his pocket, really. Just how he handled, first of all, how he handled people. I think he's great with the locker, great locker room. And I think that the media stuff, I think, you know, one of the big things about Sam, his first NIL thing was with a local organization called Table. It's a nonprofit food to feed hungry kids in Orange County, right in Chapel Hill. Just goes to show him and just his preparation. That's the main thing with Sam, how much, you know, he studied the game, he's a student of the game, and, you know, how he prepared each week. That's probably the biggest thing they got him. And his mentality on the field, you know, the way he ran it his last year, just his will to win and his competing factor. I think kind of those three things.
We always like to ask guys, it's kind of a three-part question here. And you'll get these types of questions as, you know, whenever you decide to go on to the next level. It's a combine type question, but just for people to get a chance to know you a little bit better. It's the three H's. So who's your hero? What's a hardship that you've been through, and what's the highlight so far for Drake May?
Yeah, I think my hero, I'd probably say my older brother, Luke, just kind of having him come in here and kind of had to work his way, you know, every day. He had to treat practice like his games, kind of earn the respect of Coach Williams, and then kind of him in the shining moment of him getting there and then winning the national championship, him being a big part of that, and just seeing him, you know, the way he handled people and also the way he played. Probably have to say my Luke's my hero. My hardship, I think going transferring from kind of transition from high school to college, you know, I lost my senior year to COVID. My freshman year here, I was obviously behind Sam. So I really had 2 years without football. and hadn't got tackled. We don't get hit in practice, so I hadn't got hit in 2 years. And I roll in there, kind of losing myself and having to find myself back, and obviously coming on onto the surface last year. But just kind of not necessarily losing my confidence, but just having to, you know, reel back in the fact that, you know, I still got talent, I still got it, the ability. So kind of that hardship of not having 2 years without, you know, taking a snap in the game, that's always tough. And then you said the last one was
highlight.
Yeah, highlight. Yep. I'll probably say, you know, winning the Coastal, you know, against Wake at their field, kind of clinching the Coastal into the AC Championship, always, you know, was an awesome thing last year. And also, I think, you know, the little highlights throughout the season, and even in fall camp, being with the guys, you know, those times you can't take for granted, you know, being in the locker room or, you know, playing cards back at the hotel or just having funny moments in the hot tub, cold tub, just fun times with the guys. You know, those are some highlights that you always look back, you know. I think some of the games, you know, game winning drive against Duke is kind of, you know, some of the playing highlights, but really the highlights in the locker room, like you probably know, you know, those are the ones you remember and the relationships you make. So
it's funny you talk about the relations you make. When I was a freshman at Carolina, your dad was a GA. Your dad was supervising study hall. But the part that I didn't have an opportunity to share is, man, your dad loved to ask guys to hey, bud, you want to throw the ball around a little bit?
Really? So, oh, man. I bet he was.
Oh, so your dad always wanted us to go to the turf. But the other thing that your dad loved, he loved to go to Woolen and play a little pickup basketball.
Oh, he loves it.
So now I got to ask you, at that May household, like, how do y'all divvy it up? Who's winning? How do y'all play 2-on-2 or whatever? Like, who is your dad on the team? And does the team with your dad win or not?
Yeah, my dad, I think, my dad and my mom, they're both, you know, as competitive as they get themselves. You know, the big thing with my dad, he's getting old. He looks about like my right guard right now. He's trying to lose some weight. He's got a bad hip. You know, back in the day, during lunch break, he used to go watch. He used to go over to Wild, play 5-on-5 every day at lunch, you know, with his work break. And he was, you know, he used to say he was a killer, and he even talked to me about time stories where he'd go play the basketball guys over there in the Dean Dome 1-on-1. He loves it. So we try to do, you know, as my brothers, we all got over. We just did 2v2, and my dad would just kind of watch, supervise, make sure nobody's getting hurt. You know, at the same time, he was eating too good and couldn't move around. I remember the last time we played 1-on-1, me and my dad, and he ended up falling and who knows, getting hurt. I hit him with the crossover or something. That was the last time I saw my dad in the court. You know, since then, he's just a rebounder, really, when Luke's shooting.
All right, Buck, it was great to catch up with your Tar Heel there, Drake May. Somebody that's going to be fascinating to watch as we go through the process again. Not going to see him in the bowl game. He has decided to sit that one out, but we will get a chance to visit with him again as we march towards the NFL draft. Speaking of which, quarterback with one of the more intriguing stories. He is the quarterback from the University of Washington. He's the Heisman Trophy runner-up. Here's our chat with Michael Penix.
I guess, first of all, for those that don't know, I think it would be great to kind of go back into your story. Your journey that you've been on has been quite incredible. But is there any way you can just kind of start with high school, the recruiting process, and how you ended up originally in Indiana?
Yeah. So for me, coming out of high school, I wasn't a guy with a ton of offers. You know, I committed early on, my sophomore, going into my junior year of high school. I committed that summer to University of Tennessee. That's where I met Coach Mike DeBoard and Nick Sheridan. You know, he was the OC, and Nick Sheridan, he was working with the quarterbacks at that time with Josh Dobbs. So I was committed since then, you know, all the way throughout my high school career. And leading up to signing day, about 2 weeks, 3 weeks at the most before signing day, new coaching staff came in, and, you know, they had their guy that they wanted in my class. So I had to basically just find another home. And at that time, Coach Sheridan and Coach DeBoer, they found their way to Indiana University. And, you know, Coach Sheridan, he was always a guy that was always communicating to me all the time, like, you know, through the whole recruiting process, even after he left Tennessee. So, you know, I just felt like I had somebody in my corner that truly believed in me from day one. And at Indiana, I felt like it was a program that, you know, there was a lot of Florida guys there, you know, at the time. So, you know, I feel like, you know, it was home for me, and it was a place where, you know, we needed to build something special. You know, it wasn't, the big winning program there at that time. So I just wanted to be a part of something special. So I took my talents there, spent my 4 years there, battled injuries every year, just trying to stay healthy. And then that led me to, after graduating from Indiana, I made my grad transfer decision, just what I felt was best for my future and, best for, my situation, just being able to get in a new setting, new team, but still with the same playbook that I was still working with, because Coach DeBoer, he was at Indiana in 2019. So he went back to Fresno State, was head coach there for a year, and then he ended up for 2 years, and then he ended up coming here to UW, and that's what led me here. It was him and what he did for me whenever he was at Indiana, just slowing the game down for me, just making the process easy. I knew that's what I wanted to be in again.
Mike, there would be a time where transfers would be negatively looked at in the NFL. Well, now that's no longer the case because we're seeing quarterbacks transfer and bounce and find better locations and those things. And so DJ could attest to that. How do you think transferring has benefited you as you think about going to the next level, being at different environments and those things? How would those things be beneficial as you step into an NFL locker room at some point in your career?
Yeah, exactly like you said, a different environment. You just got to get to learn new people. Just like you said, going into the NFL, I'm going to be in a place where, I don't know everybody, but I got to get to know those guys, build those relationships, those bonds. And, obviously that those guys know that I'm a guy that wants to win and I'm going to do whatever it takes to do that. So I was able to do that coming here. Show my teammates that, I can be a leader and I can help this team win football games, So that's the same thing that I'll be able to do at the next level as well. I feel like that'll be something that'll transition over as well. Just being able to adapt and, being able to build relationships anywhere I'm at.
Michael, I think it's really interesting. In last year's draft, we saw three quarterbacks that were drastically different in their style of play: Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, and Anthony Richardson. A lot of those guys had criticism around their games the entire run-up to the draft. How do you think you're going to handle dealing with all the outside noise as it gets closer to the 2024 draft and those things?
For me, it's just, I know what I overcome. I know the things that, could be brought up in those talks, a reason why I wanted to come back, just show another year of me being healthy, that, those injuries are past me, those are things that, I had to go through to be the player I am today. And I just feel like, I'm a winner, I feel like, at the next level, those guys want winners, and I feel like, I always display being a winner, whenever I was able to be on the field, so I feel like, those talks would be brought up, but that's why I came back for another year to, quiet those talks down. So,
all right, there you go. There's a couple player interviews. Hope you guys enjoyed those. Again, two guys are going to be fascinating to follow as we go through the spring and as we march towards the NFL draft. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Bucky's going to tee us up on some of these coaching interviews we've enjoyed over the last few months.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep expert. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Whenever we bring it on one of the more fascinating coaches in college football, that's Lincoln Riley from USC. We've seen how he's kind of transitioning from Oklahoma to USC, how he's kind of taking advantage of the portal. So now listen to that conversation that I had with him about all things going on in Southern California.
You know, Coach, so I've heard you talk on another show about Mike Leach's simplicity and the attention to detail. And I don't know if years ago you remember you and I talked about how you were able to score so many points with the little index card and all those things. But I heard the story about how I guess you guys practiced four verticals one day, the entire day. Wow. Like that was all we're doing. Can you talk a little bit about like just that philosophy in terms of being simple, but being so detailed that it doesn't really matter what the other team does. You just have so much confidence in what you guys do.
Yeah, Mike was really a master of that. There was our game planning sessions there were not, we were game planning, but it was just more, all right, what formation are we going to run four verts out of this week? I mean, it was, that was about the extent of it. It's, but it was a great lesson, I think, for all of us that came up in that because we, as coaches, we can make the mistake of outsmarting ourselves or at times outsmarting our players. And, you know, deep down, you want to do your part, you want to have your impact, and you feel like this push at times to do something new. And in reality, teach what you do very well, like you said, build up their confidence, and then the guy's ability to take that and go apply that in pressure situations and really be able to execute at a high level. Like that's what he built it upon. And you saw it. It really withstood the test of time. I mean, it's from, you know, Kentucky and where he was with Hal Mumme those early years all the way on to Mississippi State here at the end. Offense was always relevant. It was always productive and it did not change much. But he was very, very committed to it. And that's why it worked so well for all those years.
You know, so as much as I love the simplicity and the attention to detail and those things, I am just blown away by the mastery of your offense and the things that you guys have been able to do throughout your time as a play caller, watching you take like that air raid system and then add your own piece to it when it comes to the counter and the GT pulls and all that other stuff. Talk about finding your own identity as a play caller after working for a guy who was known as one of the best play calls, play designers in football.
Yeah, I think, you know, the other thing Mike was great about teaching, I think all of us, was not being afraid to think outside the box and don't really worry about the status quo or what people have done before. Just do what you think is best and don't be afraid to take those risks. And a lot of mine really evolved when we got to East Carolina and we were playing teams there that were a lot more talented than us, a lot bigger schools, and we had to find ways to win games. And I always felt like when I got a chance to call plays that I, you know, wanted the run game to be a little bit more of a factor for us than it was for in the Texas Tech years with Mike. And so with that, yeah, we just started evolving. Was lucky enough along the way, you know, at all the stops to work with some really creative guys in the offensive staff room. And yeah, it's continually evolved and it's been a lot of fun. We've still tried to lean back on some of the early concepts, that early mentality of getting really good at the things you believe in, but then also having enough wrinkles to to be able to change it up when we need to. And it's been fun to see it evolve throughout the years, and been fun to do it with the group of people that I've been lucky enough to work with.
You know, we can't talk about the offense in terms of your evolution as a play caller, the evolution of the offense, without talking about the quarterbacks. You've been around some great quarterbacks, Coach. And I mean, we just, the list goes on and on, from Baker and Kyler, Jalen Hurts, and now you have another one in Caleb Williams. What is it about Caleb Williams that has helped you take this offense to an even higher level?
Yeah, it's been a fun journey, you know, up to this point with Caleb. He's got some similarities to the other guys. He's also got some differences. It's been a fun skill set to work with, really, from the very beginning. And that, you know, he committed to us pretty fairly early in the recruiting process. So, you know, that relationship started developing from the very beginning. And to see how he's grown, how he's progressed, how he's matured as a leader, a competitor, how he's, you know, really gone from a young guy just taking it all in to a guy that really has a good grasp of what we're trying to do offensively. It's been fun to be a part of that evolution. And the great thing about this guy is he's still extremely hungry, you know, and he's still very young in terms of himself, the player, and his quarterback career. He's got a long ways to go and a lot of ways to improve, which is exciting. So he's been a lot of fun to work with. It's been great to have him out here with us at USC and see the impact that he's made in the locker room here and some of the changes that have, you know, happened here in a short amount of time. He's certainly, you know, done his part.
Where do you have it? Look, that discussion was fascinating, but it was before Lincoln Riley experienced a very difficult season for the Trojans. A lot of transition, a lot of changeover. We'll see if he can get this program back on the map in 2024. Speaking of 2024, a team that has a lot of momentum going into the next season will certainly be Florida State. Their coach, Mike Norvell, guided the Seminoles on a terrific run through the regular season, unbeaten, won the ACC championship, was left out of the college football playoff, but they have an opportunity to see if they can get it right in the bowl game. Here's a fascinating conversation with Mike Norvell.
I guess first question for me is, you know, how fun is it when you find yourself where you guys are right now? I know we'll get into all the work and the preparation that got you to this point, but do you have those moments where you kind of let it sink in of where this team is and how fun the ride is?
No, absolutely. And because it's about the journey and who you get to do it with, you know, obviously the work and the investment that all went into it, that continues to go into it. And, you know, that's something that I've really enjoyed about this team is, you know, each day, you know, that push, the desire to grow and get better. Nobody's satisfied with where we are. You know, it's about where we're going. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's a big part of, you know, our story is, you know, we've been through some challenging times we've had to work through and, you know, you'll rise up in times we've been knocked down, but, you know, the experiences have been really special, and who I get to do it with is what makes this, you know, so important to us and, you know, ultimately where we desire to be.
You know, Coach, I go way back. I played at North Carolina late 80s, early 90s when Florida State was just entering the ACC. And when Florida State came into the league, there was this aura about this team, the swag, the players and all that. And for the first time in a long time, I feel that back when I watched the Seminoles. So being there at Florida State under kind of like the tradition that Bobby Bowden created years ago, what is it like trying to bring a program back to that level?
Well, I mean, it's let me say this. We have a tremendous responsibility. And, you know, I understand that every day I sit in my office, I look out into Doak Campbell Stadium, it says Bobby Bowden Field. And, you know, what has been built here, the tremendous tradition, the legacies, you know, all the great players, you know, everybody that's come before us, there is a responsibility of what we need to do and how we need to do it. And it's not just on the field. It's in every component and aspect for these players, who they're growing to be and what ultimately, you know, we need to look like as we are trying to get back to the top of college football. And, you know, that is the standard is excellence here at Florida State. And that's what we push for. That's what we try, what we aspire to be in all things that we do. And, you know, our players have done a remarkable job in going through that journey and that daily investment to grow and get better. And, you know, this is a truly special place, and I'm honored to be able to be a part of it.
Coach, I'd be curious about the non-negotiables you have there with your program. You don't get to this level of success where you guys find yourself without having some standards that you set for the program. What are some of those non-negotiables when you're looking to bring players into your program?
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to work. I mean, if you don't love to work, I tell every recruit, don't even think about coming here. I mean, we're going to work, you know, and it's about relationships. You know, who you get to do it with is what makes the journey special. And, you know, that's what, you know, when you look at this this program, we got great players that care about each other. I mean, the word love in our program is something that's important because, you know, if you love somebody, you're willing to sacrifice for somebody. And, you know, we got a tremendous team, but that relationship aspect is really important. And I want to be around guys that truly aspire to be the best in everything that they do. You know, if it's just about ball, you know, this, you're only going to take you so far. But you also see a program that, I mean, we have a team GPA of over 3.0. And that's something that you've been the best ever in program history. And so not only are guys achieving on the field, but they're also achieving, you know, and things they're doing off of it and, you know, continuing to grow just to be the best they can be.
You know, Coach, how challenging is it to build that kind of team where everyone is connected and you have great chemistry when you have so many guys in the college landscape that are transferring and bouncing back and forth and NIL is a part of it? As a coach, how do you navigate all of those circumstances?
I mean, you just be true to who you are. You be upfront, be honest. I mean, I tell players, you know, Florida State's not for everybody. This is definitely, you know, you've got to be a different type of guy. You know, I mean, I would say it's for the real ones, and that's what we're looking for. And ultimately, I mean, this is an opportunity for guys to come and to really push themselves in every aspect. But I do believe that you see the reward, you see the payoff, you see the growth, and. You know, we just try to be true to ourselves, be very upfront and honest of expectations. But we also talk about, you know, that expectation. If you say yes, you know, what you're getting yourself into. And I think that you see that from guys that we brought in from the high school ranks and the way they've grown and developed. You see that in the transfers that have come in to make a great impact. You know, they're not just coming in for, you know, draft status. They're not just coming in to you know, even for the stage or opportunity. They're coming to be a part of this program. And, you know, we've got a great culture and a great team because of that.
Coach, I want to go back into your background a little bit because I've never got a chance to ask this question, and I've been curious about it. So I'll take you back. This had to be like 06 or 07, somewhere around there. I'm a scout, and I'm with the Ravens, and I go into Tulsa. And I found myself in there was maybe two or three scouts with me, and we're watching the Tulsa tape. Gus Malzahn is the coach there. And Buck, I'm telling you, every time they would score, hit a long home run, and you would see Malzahn running down the sideline, and he's going like this. He's pointing up at the scoreboard while it's going on. I'm like, okay, I don't know if I've ever seen that before. This is kind of interesting. But then this is the question, Coach. I had never seen we just called it the turtle play in scouting. I didn't even know what it was, but literally they snap the ball, but then the linemen don't move and they just kind of hang in there, Buck. And they look like armadillos. They just kind of then like they get hit and kind of like fall over. I just want to know, what was the install like for that play, Coach?
It became one of the great, you know, jokes and fun moments in practice because, you know, if those linemen ever get touched, you know, they needed to react accordingly, and you don't move, but if you get knocked over, so I mean, we would definitely grade the linemen. You know, there'd be some classic falls or tip over moments, and you know, it was pretty comical.
I enjoyed that visit with Coach Norvell. Man, I laugh my butt off every time I think about those turtle plays that they would run with Gus Malzahn. If you haven't seen it, trust me, you got to find it. It's hilarious. All right, a couple more interviews here on this best of episode. This one took place in early December. We had a chance to visit with Missouri head coach Eli Drinkwitz, who has done a remarkable turnaround job there with the Missouri Tigers. Here's our chat with their head coach and one of the hottest names in coaching right now, Eli Drinkwitz.
You know, first of all, what's this offseason like as you go into, you know, recruiting really heavily as you try and finish up recruiting season with the product you have to sell coming off of the year you guys just had?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting thing because, you know, college football's schedule has changed so much that we finished the regular season. We still have about 30 days before our bowl game, yet every player on your roster is a free agent right now. And so, you know, we spent 4 days. I've spent every day except for this 15-minute interview with y'all. I'm meeting with my players and talking about what is their future. Are they going to transfer? Do they want to stay? What is their role going to be? So that's kind of sped up. And then we spend the afternoon watching portal film or high school recruits because now you've got to rebuild your 85 roster. So, you know, it's an interesting time. I will say this, recruiting is all about selling either what you plan on to do or what you've done in the past. You know, the previous 3 years I was planning on, or I was selling what I was planning on doing. This year we're being able to sell tangible results. And you know, we had a 3,000 yard passer, 1,000 yard receiver, 1,000 yard rusher. I think we're the only school in the SEC to do that. I could be wrong on that. But, you know, we've got a very dynamic offense. You know, on defense, we're going to have another defensive end drafted. We had three first team all conference SEC players on that side of the ball. So we have a lot of really positive momentum. You know, my message to every recruit and whether it's in the portal or out is Mizzou provides you a lot of stability in the midst of chaos. And if you look at whether it's market history or the past, wherever you can find a stable place in the midst of chaos, that's where the most growth is going to happen. And we believe these guys have an opportunity to really grow. You can tell right behind me, our number one goal is chase two dreams. You know, we want our guys to be able to chase the dream of playing in the NFL, but we also want them to chase the dream of having a purpose outside of the game of football. And I think at Mizzou, we sell that opportunity at a really high level.
You know, Coach, the game has changed so much. Like when DJ and I and yourself, when we were coming out of school, it was about being a student athlete, getting your education. People talked about the degree. It seems like the degree part has been diminished when you're talking about opportunities and those yep. things because of NIL. So as a coach and as a leader of young people, how do you still show them that you care about them beyond football while also having to navigate the transfer portal and free agency, as you talk about? It just seems like college football is at a crossroads because yeah. it's no longer the college football that we all knew and loved coming up.
Yeah, it's not. But I think in the middle of the whole thing, you have to start with loving your players. You have to start with what it's really all about. And the reason why I got into coaching had nothing to do with the amount of money they pay me, nothing to do with the big stadiums. It had to do with the desire to really impact young people's lives. And, man, I lost my way for a little bit the last 2 years like that. I was always stressed and consumed about all those other things. But, man, this year it's been about my players. And I think so many times, like, everybody's chasing this NIL, which is good, man. I'm all for these guys. I think they deserve absolutely. I wish we'd get to a revenue share model. That's a whole nother conversation. But the most valuable thing they're going to get from the University of Missouri is not the NIL. It's going to be that degree, because the degree has earning power for 60 years. NIL is a one-time earning power opportunity. And so they have to combine that. Like, you know, it is a lot of money that these guys are getting, which is, again, awesome. But it's not going to compare to the millions of dollars that they're going to earn based off having a college degree and the connections that we can provide through the university. And so, you know, again, for us, that's just a huge emphasis. It's a huge emphasis of finding a purpose outside of the game. We all know the game is going to end for everybody at some point. Look at Tom Brady. It finally ended for him last year. But he has a bigger purpose than just the game. And I want all my guys to find that.
One of the things that we always talk about here when we're talking about evaluating, we can all, you know, we can all watch the tape and say this guy can play, this guy can't play. It's a lot more, it's the makeup on guys that ends up determining how successful they're going to be. I know it's the same with you when you're recruiting these high school kids or yep. transfer portal kids. I was talking to a GM the other day, and they were playing a bunch of rookies. And I said, what's the key to getting these young guys out in the field and playing well? And he said, we had to identify guys who love it and guys that can learn it. Mm-hmm. And I know how hard that is at the NFL level to do that with college kids. How in the world are you able to find out if a 17, you know, maybe you start recruiting them when he's 16, that they, A, that they love it, and then how do you get the information to know that they're going to be able to learn what you're going to ask them to do?
I think it's actually easier to find out if they love it because you can wade through the BS of recruiting. You know, I told the kid yesterday on the phone, man, recruiting's not real. Okay. Like, the day you step foot on campus, none of the recruiting matters. It's going to matter if you show up on time to weights. That's what's going to determine whether or not you're successful. And what people post on Twitter is not going to be motivation for you to show up and work out, because you're going to be doing up downs if people are late. So, like, I don't really care about recruiting stuff. And guys that are constantly consumed with recruiting and their announcements and all those different things, those are the guys that you first go, I don't know. I don't know if the juice is going to be worth the squeeze. You know, we actually have a saying right now. I read this article about 3 weeks ago, mercenaries versus rusty trucks. you know, you got sports cars out there that look good and they drive fast, but man, are they going to always be reliable? That old rusty truck that Daniel and I used to have to drive around in North Carolina, man, that thing got you where you needed to go. It showed up. It had a purpose. It was driven. It didn't matter what the road conditions were. It was going to show up. I got one of those guys right now, Cody Schrader, our running back. I mean, he's a rusty truck guy. Now, he's plenty talented, don't get me wrong, but he's the definition of toughness, determination, and mindset over talent. And I think that's a combination that we all have to continue to look for. You know, I the learning part of it, I put that on our coaching staff. I think a poor worker complains about his tools. You know, I think as coaches, you got to take ownership of making sure that what you need those guys to do, you find a way to teach it. Because at the end of the day, football is still blocking and tackling. And if it's so complicated that you can't figure out the combo coverage and the checks after the motions and all that, that ain't on them. That's on you trying to have the perfect call every time on both sides of the ball. Like, it's still moving a guy against his will on the offensive side of the ball. It's still on the defensive side of the ball, hands inside, three-point or triple extension at the hips, shock and shed, and then have the courage to make contact and make a tackle. If all that other stuff's getting in the way, we got to change a little bit of what we're doing coaching.
Coach, I'm fascinated by this because obviously I grew up playing in the ACC, but the conversation about the SEC has existed since the beginning of time. Yeah. Now that you're in the conference, you've been in it before as an assistant, but now back as a head coach. What is the outside world missing about the differences in coaching and playing in the SEC versus other places?
See, this is funny because Kirby gets on game day the other day and was like, hey, if you want some of this SEC, come get it. Here's the difference for me. And I was in the ACC for 3 years, and it was a great conference, okay? And I got nothing negative to say. But the difference is when we're playing Kentucky or we're playing South Carolina or we're playing Florida this year, and those guys, you know, Kentucky's a bowl-eligible team. South Carolina and Florida end up not quite making it, even Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Every one of those teams have multiple NFL players on their roster that are going to be drafted first, second, third round. I mean, you could talk about Spencer Rattler's probably a second round drafted quarterback, and they didn't make a bowl game. Okay. Mm-hmm. They got multiple defensive tackles who are going to play in the league. That doesn't happen at every conference. The depth of talent on every team is what's different. I mean, that I just don't think people understand that. And it's not just, oh, this year they have this guy. That's a freshman who in 2 years is going to be – I mean, guys, if this conversation doesn't start and stop with Georgia's – every player on the Georgia's defense in 2021 was drafted, that's what makes this league different. I played against coached against a really, really, really good Clemson team. They had five players on defense drafted.
All right, we're going to see Coach Drinkwitz and their Missouri squad. They are going to take on Ohio State on December 29th in the Cotton Bowl. That's going to be one of the better bowl games this year. Looking forward to that. Also, paying attention to the recruiting stuff. Looks like he's been crushing it in that realm as well. Speaking of turnarounds, this is our final conversation we have for you today. This took place in the middle of November, and it's with head coach Jed Fish from Arizona, who wrapped up a 9-3 regular season, quite the year there for the Wildcats. Not much was expected, and they had a phenomenal year. We wanted to figure out what was the secret sauce there in Tucson. We did that with Jed Fish.
I guess my first question, we'll get to the success of the Wildcats and how you've turned this program around, but my first question is, when was the last time you talked to Coach Billick?
Oh, last week. I think last week. He calls me after every game.
Does he really?
Yeah. And I spoke, he came to our spring clinic. He spent 4 days with our team. He spoke to our players. He spoke to, he obviously did the clinic, but he was awesome. And then he'd spent time with our quarterbacks and it was great.
I love that.
Coach, watching your program grow from afar since you've been there, the one thing I noticed, you have brought a lot of people in to kind of talk to your team about winning and the process of winning and a championship mindset and culture. And I just admire the way that you've gone about this process. Where did those ideas stem from? Was that something that you always thought about if you ever took over a team, that I wanted to kind of impact and import all this knowledge on these players so we could turn this thing around?
Yeah. You know, it was one of those situations that I felt as if, like, if you have a chance to use your connections or to your relationships and You've got to take advantage of that. These kids don't have the type of access that some of us have had throughout the years. And, you know, a lot of times some of the decisions that I made and some of the jobs that I got very lucky for some of the guys that I worked for. And to be able to bring those guys in has been huge. Everybody that I've ever worked for has spoken to our team, you know, from Coach Carroll to Coach Shanahan to Coach Caper, to Coach Billick, to obviously Coach Belichick's been here. I think he's been in Tucson four times already since I've been the head coach. Coach McVay's been in Tucson twice. And, but on top of that, it was important for us not just to bring in football coaches or Howie Roseman or, you know, some of the GMs that I'm close with, but it was also important to bring in people in the real world. We brought the Surgeon General to speak to our team about COVID. We brought in, you know, Chief Justice of the courts to talk to them about their rights. I think it's important. We do a We Educate Wednesday every week, and it's really about how can we educate these kids in manners that they can learn about life.
Coach, you talk about all the different influences that you've had. I just think about specifically being with you in Baltimore, and the emphasis there, you know, was always about speed, toughness, instincts. And it looks like when I look at your program at Arizona, I mean, was that part of the mindset, part of your background that helped you to this? But that's when I look at your team, you've transformed it into a fast, tough, instinctive team.
Yeah, that's been we talk here, you know, about we say we want to be the most physical, the most violent, the most disciplined. And as we go ahead and do that, you know, it's how fast can you run to the ball? How fast can you chase? How many people can be around the ball at all times? What type of discipline can we have in terms of making, you know, being right there, but not going over the line? And, you know, discipline and work ethic, discipline and doing things the right way over and over. And, you know, I think that those characteristics of Baltimore, those are huge. That's what you look for when you recruit guys. You know, do they have football instincts or not? You know, I mean, we were doing a one-on-one yesterday, and Jaden, one of our quarterbacks threw a back shoulder on a corner route in the end zone, and the DB coach came up to me and he said, "Was that designed?" I said, "No, those are just football instincts. When the corner overplays the corner route, I mean, he's able to make that throw." And I think that's what's gotten us to where we want to be, is we wanted to find guys with those instincts.
You know, Coach, what's interesting to me is when I went to college, I played for Mack Brown in North Carolina. He was 1-10 before I got there, then 1-10 my freshman year. So 2-20 those first 2 years. And I just remember the work that it took to kind of change the mindset of a team and a program that had been losing. How hard did you have to work on the mentality of the players that you inherited and the players that you brought in to kind of shed some of those losing ways and that losing mentality?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly has been that type of adjustment. I mean, the program was 0-12 before we got here, losing 70-7 in the last game that they played. And then we went 1-11 in our first year and then signed the best recruiting class that they've ever had here. And the point of that was we had to give confidence without evidence. We had to sell something of the future and make them believe that things were going to change. But what I appreciate more than anybody is the fact that we had the amount of people that believed in it. And you have to, if you don't have belief, you have no chance to turn this thing around, because it was not in a good spot. It was 1-23 over a course of a 2 year span. And you had to get everybody to say, why are we working this hard? Why are we working this hard and not winning? Why are we working that? Why is coach making us do this and do that and all the different things that go into changing a culture? You need to see the results. Well, we kept telling them the results will come. You just have to trust it. And trusting the process is obviously, it's a lot of people say it, but it's really hard to do. And what I appreciate most about our guys is we say not only do you have to trust the process, but you have to embrace the grind. And, you know, it's going to come together with both things. And I think our guys saw and are now reaping some of the benefits, but we're still not where we want to be.
It's a different time in college football, Jed. You look at, you know, you talk about recruitment and the job you guys have done there. Now, the next challenge is retention. As you bring in all these players, I was talking to a mutual friend of ours last night, and he said he was at two different schools on visits as a scout. And he said both schools mentioned they think they're getting the same transfer quarterback this next year. Mind you, you guys are still, you know, teams are still playing. This quarterback is on a team right now, and two different schools have been going after him and think that they're getting him. I mean, how do you balance this between recruiting the high school kids and you got to retain your own guys?
Yeah, I mean, it has become a big challenge, and it's disappointing in a lot of ways. And I think what needs to happen is the people that have left your program, you need to look to see how they've done. Mm-hmm. And you have to be honest with them, and you have to be honest with guys that come into your office and tell you, you know, oh, I think, oh, like, why would you want to leave if you're good? You want to leave if you're good because someone's offering you money. That's the only reason why you would want to leave if you're good. And what happens is you don't know what's going to happen next. You don't know where you're going to go. You don't know what it's going to look like. I mean, and next thing you know, you make a decision for 1 year's worth of college money versus a 10-year NFL career, possibly. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're good but not great, you're not really a retention issue. You're going to be retained. If you're poor, then, you know, that's an evaluation issue. But in the end, the guys that are coming, the quarterbacks we're referring to and all that other stuff is someone's going to try to offer them more money. And I wish those kids just took a step back and said, for what? 1 year? Mm-hmm. 1 year? Mm-hmm. You know, why are they coming after me? Because I'm doing great here. So how about do great again? Like, trust
Stop
me.
Stop using logic. Stop using the logic, man.
And I've said this. I've said, you know, the unique part about us here at Arizona is I coached in the NFL for 14 years. So when coaches, when college coaches tell you, we're going to help you get to the NFL, the real answer is, well, how do you know? Mm-hmm. How do you know? You know, you've never sat in a draft room. You've never talked to scouts. You haven't been had 4 years of an Ozzie Newsome draft room and listened to how it went. You never went and worked with Bill Belichick and talked about how you're going to evaluate a player or Les Snead or, you know, Charlie Casserly or all the different guys that you have the privilege of working with. I mean, Howie Roseman was my college roommate. Dave Caldwell now works for Howie. Dave was our GM in Jacksonville. So when we talk to these kids, I keep telling them, like, if you think going to another school and being less productive is going to help you get drafted, you are wrong. You're wrong. No matter what your uncle's telling you, no matter what your cousin's telling you, you're wrong.
Have you ever used a spreadsheet? Have you ever, like, literally, or a whiteboard and said, look, okay, I'm going to assume that this school is offering you X amount of money. Look at the lifetime earnings of an NFL contract. Why are you sacrificing all of this for this?
I do it all the time.
Yeah.
I do it all the time. But the problem is it's almost you're just using logic and it's too easy. You know, it's like, it's just a too easy conversation. If you're that good here, if you're that good here, then you'll get drafted.
Yep.
I promise you, all 32 scouts will come through Arizona. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind. We will have 32 eyes on you, plus, plus, plus. So be good. Mm-hmm. Be good. What are you going to make? A few $100,000 somewhere? $500,000? $250,000? I don't know the ridiculous money that people are getting paid. But that's nothing compared to what you're going to make if you're actually good. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're actually good, you can really make, like, a lot of money.
Well, there you go. There's our little college football best of. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. It was a fun one. Again, just a little bonus for you. This week, we have 6 total episodes, so 2 more to go this week. And also want to remind you, the Holiday Classic is back on NFL Network this Christmas Eve. Watch a special Sunday night of primetime football as the Patriots and Broncos light up the night. The NFL Holiday Classic, Christmas Eve, live at 8 p.m. Eastern, only on NFL Network and streaming on NFL Plus. That's going to do it for us today. Hope you guys enjoyed this one, and we'll see you next time right here on Move the Sticks. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024.
federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.